The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul. In your soul. In your soul. A century of dreams. The loggers and the cowboys, double crossed by Old Sack and Salem. They cursed rough roads, hauling their loads, but they did their best to deliver them. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger.
This is an encore broadcast of Jefferson State of Mind.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about the state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does.
It does settle in your soul. Morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and my partner, Wynn Carpenter. How are you, buddy?
I am doing just dandy. How are you doing?
And our producer, Pat. How are you, buddy?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm great. Things are looking good.
Good.
Well, we're going to start this song off.
Thanks
with
for being
Pat.
Here, Pat.
Yeah, and he's going to be singing for us this morning in the key of L.
Yeah, key of L is my favorite key. It's just below F, F sharp, I guess.
We should form a trio.
That'd be good.
And
hey,
just
got a stay future,
home.
Man.
And just stay home.
Yeah,
that'd tank our ratings. That's sure.
We'd be called the Dinosaurs.
There you go.
All right. Well, we're broadcasting live here from downtown Reading at KCNR 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, your talk radio. You also can stream us live at KCNR1460.com, and we have an archive. We have lots of archives.
Mm-hmm.
We've got archives forever. And you can go to the programming on KCNR1460.com, go to programming, go to Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E, and you can listen anytime, anywhere, forever and ever. Hallelujah. So we're here. I made Pat laugh.
There you go.
I actually made Pat laugh.
Yeah, that was exceptional. Yeah, I'm going to have to get you in the choir next Christmas.
All right, buddy. That sounds good. Where would our choir be?
The last choir to do that, I think, is probably over at Reading Christian Fellowship, where they do the Hallelujah Chorus as a...
Yeah. They do.
Well, that's neat.
Well, you probably sing bass, don't you? I mean, you got a great radio voice.
Actually, I used to sing tenor and baritone.
Hmm.
Before my lungs were shot.
That was back in the day.
Yes. What did Robin Williams say? If you can remember the 60s, you weren't there.
You weren't there.
Well, this morning we're going to have an interesting time here, folks. We're kind of settling in. We are settling in till 12 o'clock today. Mark and Linda won't be here for Sovereign Mind, so we are going to do their program and substitute for them this morning. If you have any questions or comments, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 605-4567. And we have a very special guest who's coming on, Mr. Mark Baird. How are you, Mark? How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Better than we deserve.
Yeah.
We just had an interesting decision come down from the Supreme Court, a New York case, the New York Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, and it took away having to show proper cause for a CCW, but it was a pretty big victory, and Mark, we'd like to have you talk about that and how that affects your case, which is Baird versus Bonta. So if you want to get started on that, brother, shoot away.
Well, it was a pretty big case, you're right, and it was a fairly broad decision. It missed the mark in several areas that are going to become important to us in the state of California, being one of the six slave states with regard to the Second Amendment. And those are California, New Jersey, New York, and a couple other of the smaller states, where Massachusetts, where you literally have been banned legislatively from exercising Second Amendment guarantees. In California, I'll just remind people who don't know this, because these things are really important as to how we approach this victory from New York Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin. And by the way, Bruin is the state's attorney general for New York,
right.
So that's why that name is there. Number one, in 1968, with the enactment of the Mulford Act, Penal Code 25850 was legislatively put into the Code of California Regulations, and that is the outright ban on the open carry of a loaded weapon outside your home. You cannot carry one of those.
What year was that? What year was that, Mark?
That was 1968, when, after the Black Panther Party
okay.
had a demonstration in Sacramento and scared the crap out of all the people in the California legislature, and so they disarmed all black people because it scared them that black people could actually protest just like everybody else can. And in the doing of it, with NRA complicity, they took everybody's gun away from them.
Of course.
So now it was still legal to carry an unloaded weapon in the state of California openly. And you could do that by having an unloaded weapon on one hip and your magazine in your back pocket or on the other hip. And as long as the weapon was unloaded, you still had the ability to carry that. Now, we're not talking about rights quite yet, because, of course, all of this is unconstitutional, and that goes without saying, but we're just talking about what is. And so that was the case for handgun up until 2012. When a state senator, Anthony Portantino, who made his bones as the art director on the Grizzly Adams TV show, and that catapulted him to state prominence, he said, you don't need a gun to go buy a cheeseburger. And so he introduced a law to ban the practice of openly carrying an unloaded handgun. And that went over so well with his Democratic pals that he did the same thing in 2013 for rifles. And so you used to be able to carry an unloaded rifle outside your home, and then in 2013 that was banned as well. So now we have an outright ban on the open carry of any pistol or rifle, either loaded or unloaded, and that's legislative. And so then we have to look at concealed carry. California is what is known as a may issue state. In other words, in all 58 jurisdictions countywide, according to Penal Code 26550, and then, or 26150, and is 58 jurisdictions, which are counties. 26155 includes cities where police chiefs, if you're within the jurisdiction of, say, Redding or the city of Red Bluff or the city of Yreka, the police chief has jurisdiction over your concealed carry permission through Penal Code 26150 for sheriffs and 155 for police chiefs. And if you beg permission of a government official with no right of appeal, by the way, they tell you no, it's no, and you can't, and there's no one that you can appeal to under the regulation or statute, then you may or you may not get permission to carry a concealed weapon. And by concealed weapon, that excludes rifles because the weapon has to be concealable. So you are banned by legislative statute from carrying any rifle anywhere, loaded, unloaded, hidden, out in the open. And you have the ability to beg for permission to carry a concealed weapon in the state of California, and the state may issue that permit, and it may not. And historically, there are some jurisdictions that would give the permits more liberally than others. There are some jurisdictions that if you bribed the sheriff with a big campaign contribution, you would get it there, like Santa Clara and Los Angeles County. Some jurisdictions, you're just never going to get one because, according to our, in our case, the state's expert witness, it's bad public policy. Yes, you have the right. Yes, you have the right. Yes, you have a Second Amendment right. The state admits that. Yes, it includes self-defense. Yes, that right attaches to the individual. The state admits that. Yes, that extends outside the home. The state admits that. Yes, lives could be saved if a person under direct attack had possession of a weapon. Yes, their life could be saved. But according to the state's witness, we don't want to have people with weapons because it's, even though they may save their own lives with them, because it's bad public policy. Now, I've scoured the Constitution, as you know, in California's Constitution and the United States Constitution many, many times, and I have yet to discover where public policy is in charge of people's inalienable rights or any right or any ability to do anything. In other words, public policy is not an entity, and public policy is not a governing statute, and public policy is not a legislative edict. Public policy is the opinion of whoever has it. And what is public policy? Oh, it's whatever I say it is today, and that could change tomorrow because public policy changes from day to day according to the whim of those who have power over you. So that's the situation in California today. It is a may. Oh, and there's one other interesting caveat to the slave states, and that is show just cause. You must show just cause in order to receive permission to defend yourself with a weapon, either concealed weapon, because you have to be able to prove that you have a need greater than the average person on any given day, or else you could be denied that permission. And in a lot of jurisdictions, they do use that in order to deny the permission. They just say, well, you don't have enough cause to fear for your life. The fact that you could be attacked at any given moment on any given street or in the Walmart parking lot is meaningless. You have to have a specific threat far greater than the average individual, and that's what show just cause.
We actually had a guy attacked here at Taco Bell by a homeless person and murdered. It can happen anywhere. You're absolutely right. What is the average person? That's insane. Go ahead, brother.
Well, gosh, it's too bad the guy didn't know about the impending murder 2 months prior, and he might have been able to apply for a permit, but wait a minute, the background check takes 6 months, so no, that wouldn't have helped him. He'd be dead anyway.
Wow.
There are problems with this permission regime that California has going. And then there's the unseen, the unknown permit, I'm going to call that. And that is 26150B2 or 26155B2. That is the permission in counties under 200,000 people. You must apply in the county of your residence. It has to have less than 200,000 people. You have to be approved for this permit with show just cause and may issue and all the other stuff. And you could receive a permission to openly carry a loaded weapon in counties with less than 200,000 people.
You know, our
the only problem with that is that permit has never, ever, ever once been issued in the state of California in any county, including the ones that you're allowed to get it, because the Department of Justice not only refuses to issue the application for the form, and the penal code says all pistol permits must be completed on forms issued by DOJ, But no sheriff would ever issue one anyway because they're afraid their officers might get scared if they saw a gun.
Our newly elected sheriff actually stated that he believes in the right of the Second Amendment. This is Sheriff Johnson. He believes in the right of the Second Amendment, but would not allow an exposed weapon. That was his reasoning for not giving out a 26-150 B2. So
well,
I'm trying to figure, how do those two words fit in the same sentence? How can you believe in a right, but be the person who won't allow that right to be used?
He's not God.
Well,
God is the one that gave us the right.
All you'd have to be is one of the 58 sheriffs in California because they all do the same
thing. They all do the same thing.
So, yep.
Constitutional
so
sheriffs.
That's the situation that we, the subjects of the government of California, and that's what you are. You're not a free individual. You're not a citizen of the United States. You are a subject of the government of California in all its forms, including your liberty-loving sheriff. And that's where you are right now. You are a subject in a slave state where rights require permission, and permission can be denied with no right of appeal for some very spurious reasons. For example, I'm not going to allow bad public policy. You can't show enough need, and I could go on and on, but I don't want to belabor that. So now we come to the Bruin opinion. And along the way, by the way, people like Charles Nichols, George Young in Hawaii, myself, we're all attacking this in court. And all of these cases, including the ban on 30-round magazines, the ban on buying whatever pistols are commercially available because we have a safety roster, the demand that all pistols have micro-stamping, the ban on sale of ammunition unless you pay a fee, get permission, and pass a background check. All of these things are in the pipeline right now. And pretty much all of those cases have been placed on hold pending the outcome of this Bruin v. New York rifle and pistol case. So California has a really, really deep pool in its House of Cards backyard. And it's filled with Second Amendment cases that were essentially sitting there waiting for the outcome of New York rifle and pistol v. Bruin. And the only exception to that, I think, is Charles Nichols. His case was put on hold pending the outcome of George Young, which was put on hold pending the outcome of NYRPA. So we have a lot of cases in the pipe right now, mine included, that were waiting the outcome of this case. So we're looking at this now, and according to the people who hate liberty and hate our rights and hate us, as a matter of fact, and wish we leave our money behind, but they wouldn't have to deal with us personally. According to them, this case is a nightmare, and it's going to cause the streets to run red with blood and, so on and so forth. And the Supreme Court should have never ruled the way they did, and the dissent is an interesting thing. I want to go into the dissent first, because essentially the dissent states that the government has to be able to use compelling interest in order to prevent gun violence. Well, what's compelling interest? That is public policy. That is it is more important for us to deny you liberty than it is for you to enjoy that right, because by denying you that liberty, we can fulfill a compelling interest the state has, which is public safety. And the public safety card is used liberally in California, even though it is the law in this state that the government has no duty and no responsibility to protect you from anything, crime, violence, or anything else for that matter, and that police forces and sheriff's departments only have a general duty to protect society as a whole, but can't be held liable for failing to do so. So remember that. The government has no requirement to protect you from crime, violence, or anything else. All right. And also, in the dissent, they ignore gangs, drugs, crooks, suicides, gun theft. In other words, they ignore the criminal. They think that by restricting the rights of the lawful people in this state, that somehow violence will decrease while ignoring the violence committed by the people who, by their very moniker, are evil, criminals. And so the dissent is about 50 pages. I oh, I had a hard time pushing through that because my blood just started to boil every time I started to read it. But, you know, I did push through it, and it says nothing really constitutional. It simply says that the government should be able to do whatever they want, no matter what you have a right to, because they're the government and you're not.
You were talking about the police and how they don't have to protect you. Can you tell the folks, and I know you know where that is in the penal code and everything, but the police really don't have any obligation to protect you, and that's something I think that a lot of people need to know and that don't know. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, in California Government Code, Section 821, 845, and 846, it says that no state employee can be held liable for failing to protect and no state employee has a duty to protect, nor can they be held liable for failing to protect an individual. So they have sovereign immunity, and even though you, in other words, let's say as a, let's use the example, if I was a police officer standing on one side of Cypress Avenue and I observe you on the other side being beat to death by eight crooks with lead pipes, I would have no duty to intervene in that crime. And I couldn't be held liable for failing to intervene. And when you really take a look at it, this is not bad law, because if I were to intervene in that crime and be overcome by the eight thugs with lead pipes, then they would also have my gun. And they'd be able to do whatever they wanted with my stuff in addition to killing me, and I wouldn't have helped anybody. So in that situation, I would probably have to call for backup. I wouldn't. I'd probably rush over there and get involved in it. But, you know, the average guy is trained to call for backup so that the force that you bring to the crime scene is greater than the force the criminals are able to exert over the innocent. And that's probably the safest way to do it. And it's not wrong. It's the way, it's standard issue. In other words, when you rush a building in a hostage situation, you call for backup, you make sure all the exits are covered, even though people inside may be murdered. And you look at the Uvalde shooting.
Right.
The cops stood outside the door of that classroom for 58 minutes before they intervened.
Right.
I mean, I personally would have ran around to the window and shot the guy through the window.
One of the parents jumped the fence and saved her kid.
Yeah. So, you know, it just brings to mind that in Warren versus D.C., Rich versus New York, Martinez versus California, Gonzalez versus City of Cortez, Duchenne versus Winnebago County, Ballesteri versus Pacifica Police Department, the government has no duty and no responsibility to protect you as an individual unless you're in a protected class of people. What are the protected class of people? Prisoners. So once I deprive you of your liberty by force as a police officer, I now am duty-bound to protect you from harm. But as an ordinary citizen with no outstanding merit, really, I'm not responsible to protect you. And when you really think about it, I don't have ESP. How could I know you're going to be the victim of a crime? And if I protect you but fail to protect John Doe across town at the exact same moment he's being victimized, you know, you can see where that would lead to problems. If police were held responsible for failing to protect people, they'd be getting sued all the time because they're not, they don't have ESP. They're not omniscient. They're not omnipresent. So here is the job of the police for all the people who don't know this. Their job is to arrive at the scene of the crime, investigate a crime that's been committed, attempt to apprehend the perpetrator, and if they apprehend him, turn him over to the justice system. That's the job of police. The job of the police is not to be there in advance for free crime so that they can stop a crime before it's even happened. They can't do it. And it would be an impossible task. So what is a person to do knowing that it's a tough world out there and there are crooks and those crooks are out to grab your stuff and steal your things and maybe even take your life in the process? What is a person to do? Well, you can either do nothing or you can avail yourself of the unalienable right to keep and bear arms, and that right declares itself that it shall not be infringed, and then by arming yourself, and hopefully you're smart enough to train yourself in the use of the arms. That's not demanded by the amendment, but hopefully it's a smart thing to do, that you'll be able to protect yourself, your family, your friends, your community, your state, and your nation should you ever be called upon to do that. And that's how we protect ourselves in this nation, because the cops can't and won't do it.
Yeah, and I think that's so true. You know, the Second Amendment is basically the right to life, the right to protect yourself is inherent in every living thing. I mean, you raised buffalo. Tell that to the mama buffalo. If you try to walk over with her baby in there, you've told me quite a few stories on that one. So really and truly, I mean, the Second Amendment is to bind the government. And it seems like that's something to where people are kind of, I think they're missing the reasoning for that. The right of self-protection and protection of property and protection of loved ones is self-evident. It's an inalienable right. The Second Amendment simply tells the government, get the hell away from this. You can never do anything about this. You can never infringe on our right to protect ourselves. Now, we do have to go to a break, my good friend, so we'll be back in about 2 minutes, Mark. Hold on. We're here with Mark Barrett at Jefferson State of Mind. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Hear us streaming 24/7 at KCNR1460.com.
North State Relief, a nonprofit serving Northern California communities, is raising awareness that there are free financial counseling services available to North State residents, provided by certified counselors at Balance Pro. They offer free HUD certified financial counseling for debt, rental, and mortgage assistance, student loans, and financial counseling for veterans and fire victims. Get advice from the pros at balancepro.org or by calling 1-800-777-PLAN. That's 1-800-777-7526.
It's the Ramsey Show, talk radio where debt is dumb and cash is king. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back, and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta, and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227. To get some of the best-tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com. Don't miss This Morning with Gordon Deal, followed by the Sue McClain News Hour, Free Fire Radio, and Armstrong and Getty on KCNR.
This is an encore broadcast of Jefferson State of Mind.
I bought a Colt 45 today. Swung the holster around my waist and nothing felt so right than having that baby sitting on my side. I took my buddy out the rain.
Sally Louise. Rally Sally with the music. Got a girl.
Her gun songs.
Hilarious. Yes. Mark.
Are you still there?
Are you still there, buddy?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, so.
Didn't lose you.
So let's get into, let's first, I want to go through just a touch about my case because it's important, and then I want to get right into the NYRPA case because there are things that were held, and more importantly, there are things that were not held that will affect us here in California, and this part is pretty important.
NYPR meaning?
New York.
NYRPA, New York Rifle and Pistol Association.
Right, the one, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it takes too long to say that whole thing.
Yes, sir.
My case is about open carry, and here's why. Now, even though the New York Rifle and Pistol Association case, that began as an open carry case, but the judges in the Supreme Court changed it to a concealed carry case, and they did that unilaterally. I don't know why, but they did. And the problem with that case was the just cause or show, extraordinary need for the permit over the common person. That's one of the central components of that case. My case is an open carry case because Peruta v. San Diego, which is a case that was decided by the Ninth Circuit, and then went again en banc by the Ninth Circuit, because one thing about the Ninth Circuit, they used the two-step interest balancing approach to defeat every Second Amendment case in the last 50 years. So the Ninth Circuit hates your liberty. They hate the Second Amendment. They're Democratic operatives. You might as well know that now. But what they did was, out of that, they ruled that concealed carry is not a right. It is not a right. That's very important. Say that to yourself. Concealed carry is not a right. It is a permission. States can regulate it. States can do whatever they want with it. And since open carry in California is absolutely illegal in all forms, loaded, unloaded, rifle, shotgun, pistol, whatever, concealed carry was your only option, and that is not a right. That is a permission. So people who are denied that permission, too bad, so sad, concealed carry is not a right. And by the way, the Supreme Court refused to rehear that case. So that now is settled law, according to the ground, the quicksand we're standing on at the moment. My case challenges Penal Code 25850, and it challenges 26150 and 155B2, which were the only avenues to open carry in the state of California. And we want all of those statutes stricken, because 26150 and B2 and 155B2 have the exact same requirements. In fact, they have more stringent requirements than a concealed carry permit, and concealed carry is not a right. So we want those statutes stricken. We want 25850 stricken, because that is the outright ban on the open carry of a loaded weapon, and we want 26350 and 400 stricken, because those are the outright bans on the open carry of unloaded weapons. And then that's a very important distinction, and you'll see why in a minute. So now the NYRPA case, v. Bruin, it had certain holdings. So the court held, and this is their decision. They don't really get into a lot of whys in what they held. That comes in the concurring opinions later. So what they held was that proper cause requirement violates the 14th and the Second Amendment by preventing law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs from exercising the Second Amendment right to public self-defense. The word public is very important, because the court directs now that the carry of a weapon in the interest of self-defense extends beyond the home. That's really big in this. That's one of the biggest things that they found. So now in California, self-defense did not extend outside the home, and that's why the ban on the open carry of loaded or unloaded weapons was considered constitutional, because you don't have that right outside the house in California. Well, now you have the right, and it extends into public areas per the New York rifle and pistol case. The other thing that it held is, and this is very important, it held that, and this literally comes from the Heller opinion, when the plain text of an enumerated right covers an individual's conduct, the Constitution presumptively protects that conduct. And to justify that regulation, the government, any regulation that the government passes in opposition to that, the government must demonstrate that that regulation is consistent with the nation's historic tradition from the implementation of the Second Amendment. In other words, the Second Amendment protects the right to keep and bear arms, and that right shall not be infringed. And that's the operative clause. And we're not talking about the prefatory clause yet, the militia part, because that was discussed later, and it really isn't germane to the finding, because what the court also found is that the right to self-defense is an individual right. It extends outside the home, and it is wholly unconnected with malicious service. So we don't really need to talk about the preparatory clause. Now, the state does. They say, oh, it's a collective right, and you have to be in the militia to even talk about the right. Well, that's not true, and it's certainly not true now after this case and Heller came out. So in order to deny a person a Second Amendment right, the government must prove that that denial is consistent with historical regulation from the time of implementation of the Second Amendment, and that's 1791. All right. Now, the second important holding is that the government in California uses a tripartite two-step interest balancing test to determine whether a right is worth having. In other words, if the government has a compelling interest in denying a right, they have to show that their interest in denying the right is more important than you having the right. Well, how do they do that always? They just say public safety. Public policy, public safety, public policy, kind of interchangeable there. So what they do is say, we can't have public safety if you have the right to self-defense. And that's what they've been doing for 50 years. Well, what New York Rifle and Pistol says is that the two-step approach is one step too many. Here is the only step that's important. The text of the amendment, as informed by history, and they expressly reject interest balancing. So if the Second Amendment says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and you are keeping and bearing arms, that's the only step required. In other words, if your conduct is in accordance with the plain text of the amendment, your conduct is protected. And they reject the interest balancing, and that's been held in the case. So that's really important as well. And the reason they say that is that the Second Amendment, the government is not allowed to interest balance because the Second Amendment is the product of an interest balancing by the people. And here's the important language in that. And that surely elevates the Second Amendment above all interests. In other words, law-abiding, responsible citizens to use arms for self-defense is interest balancing on the part of the people codified by the Second Amendment, which guarantees a right that predates the Constitution, predates government, and the right itself declares that it shall not be infringed. So that is the balanced interest of the people against the government, if you will. Because tyranny and self-defense are the two reasons the Second Amendment exists. So now the test, the only test that's applicable is whether regulations are consistent with the Second Amendment text and historical understanding at the time the amendment was implemented. And the court goes on in later places to say that that it would be very difficult for any historical record to prove that it wasn't intended as it was written, because there isn't any. Now, there are a couple of things that the court did not do, and that is that, and those are important. For example, they say, well, the Second Amendment is not absolute, and that's something that the gun grabbers jump on all the time. You can't carry any gun anytime you want, anywhere you want. Well, what Heller did was it broke that down. You may not carry a gun in places that are considered sensitive, and those are schools and government buildings, and they outlined that. But you can bet the California legislature is out to say, well, a sensitive place is any place where more than three people are at the same time. Now, the case does address that later, and it says that sensitive places cannot be construed as just being out in public generally. So that's not how this can be. In other words, the entire island of Manhattan can't be considered a sensitive place. Any place where people routinely go and routinely congregate is a place where the Second Amendment is required, not where it's optional. However, the government does have the ability to say, well, you can't carry a gun into the governor's office and you can't carry a gun into the kindergarten. I don't agree with those things, but that's what the court did hold. And there is no historical basis to declare every place as sensitive because it is generally, and they can't call a place sensitive because there are a lot of cops there, because the cops have a general responsibility to protect society, but not an individual responsibility. So the plain text protects the carry of handguns in public. That's another finding of the court. Nothing in the text of the Second Amendment draws any distinction between home and public carry. And public carry is a new term they invented out of this case, by the way. So the word bear, in other words, you keep a gun, means you have it at home. And the court also specifically said it's very unlikely that bare arms meant you sit there in your bedroom in your pajamas with a pistol strapped to your hip. I mean, that's what keep means. It means you can keep a gun at home, but you bear the arm in public. And confrontation can surely take place outside the home. The court found that. So we have a Second Amendment. It does extend beyond the house. And here's another important part of this case. They specifically made reference out of Heller that bear means to wear or carry on your person, in your pocket, or inside your clothing, any instrument capable of offensive or defensive use in the event of conflict with another person. That's relatively broad, and one could say, well, that encompasses concealed carry as well as open carry. I think you'd be right to do that. I don't think the text of the Second Amendment makes any distinction about whether you shove your gun in your pants or put it in a holster outside your pants. But the court is a little conflicted in that because they do not object to, quote, reasonable regulations on concealed carry. And those regulations historically apparently are prolific enough in the founding or just after the founding era that the court is considering them as perhaps valid, although they also specifically say that the court cannot conclude that overly broad regulations, in other words, you can't use that as a license to deny people their rights. You can't. It can't take 2 years for you to get a permit. It can't cost $1 million. So if the permitting regulations are used to deny people the right, then the court invites those challenges, which we know cost millions and take years. So the court is opening up a new bailiwick where states are going to try to restrict our rights, and we'll have to fight for years to get those rights anyway.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. So if there's what if you're a business and you have a particular business and you don't want anyone to carry a firearm in your business, does that business person have the right to do that, or was any of that brought up?
Well, you have the Fourth Amendment right to do whatever you want in your own property. If you put a sign in the door that says no guns allowed, then that's your property, and people who approach that property are free to shop somewhere else, or they're free to obey, or they're free to disobey the wishes of the owner. In other words, if you have a concealed weapon on your person and no one can see it, and you walk up to the guy's door and you say, well, I don't think I'm going along with that because I have a right to defend myself that's God-given, and you go in the store anyway. I mean, now, if you were discovered in the store with the weapon, what would the owner have the power to do?
Well,
not a trespass. It's a public place where the public is invited to go. He would say, hey, you either need to leave or put your weapon in your car. And then you can argue your position or leave or whatever. So I think those things are, you know, people have property rights. I don't have any real problem with that. If you want to chase away liberty-loving people from your business, you're free to do that, and you can vote with your money.
Yeah, and
so
I think you're right. You know, and the thing is that I can't imagine many businesses wanting to do that. But point being is that wouldn't that be in violation of the United States Code, Title 18, Code Section 241? Because what they're doing is
no.
Because even if they are stopping you from a constitutionally protected right,
no. Because 18241 applies to government officials under color of authority.
So that's right. Okay, that's the clarification.
It would be a Title 42 violation, 1983, which is a financial penalty only. It's not a criminal code. It's a civil
code. That's a suing deal,
Well, yeah, and those are civil matters,
yes.
And you'd have to sue to make your point,
there
and you'd
go.
Have to win the suit, and you know, I don't think many people would be willing to go to that kind of trouble. I certainly wouldn't.
Yeah.
If I saw a big sign in Sportsman's Warehouse that said no guns allowed, I'd probably just go to Big Five and buy one.
I'm with you, brother. Okay, well, that's good. Thanks for clarifying that up. Go ahead.
Okay, so the only real restrictions to carrying arms historically found were concealed carry, which we know is not a right, it's a permission, and then going about in order to induce fear or terror, and that was not a prohibition on carry. It was simply a requirement that whoever was brandishing around town would have to pay a fee for a bond, and then he could still go ahead and carry. So really, there are very few historical prohibitions, and the court even refused to consider 20th century history. They said 20th century history was way too far away from the founding and had no relevance. So what we have here is that the court held that the Second Amendment is not a second-class right subject to an entirely different body of rules than other enumerated rights in the Bill of Rights. And that comes right from the McDonald case. And so New York's ban on the Second Amendment was reversed and remanded to the lower court for review according to these guidelines as set out in New York Rifle and Pistol. That's the important part. Those are the important components of the case. So the state's licensing laws violated the Constitution. The show cause violated the Constitution, or show proper cause violated the Constitution. Now, so in my case, we can use a lot of these provisions. In fact, the state's attorney general in California, California government was so panicked by this that the state's attorney general has already sent out guidance to all issuing agencies not to ask for proper cause anymore.
Wow.
That's fairly big. They panned straight out of that one.
Wow.
But it doesn't change the fact that California, and I talked to the attorney about this at great length, it does not change the fact that California is a may-issue state. So even if they don't ask you for just cause, all they have to do is say, man, I don't like your shirt. You're not getting one. In fact, they don't even have to tell you why. They just say, no. And that's happened to a couple of our people. You know, they make some sheriff mad, and he's petty and stupid, and so they revoke the guy's permit and won't let him get another one. Well, that's what we need to get rid of. We need to get rid of May issue. And by the way, and here's the things that the case did not do, and these are really important because these give the government a way forward. The case did not get rid of sensitive places. And Justice Kavanaugh, in his concurring opinion, and I don't know why these judges can't just shut up after the opinion's issue. You know, so Kavanaugh wrote a concurrence in which he opened the door to a really arcane title called suitability. There are a few states that have suitability requirements. In other words, you don't have to show just cause. But we get to decide whether you are a suitable individual to have a permit. Are you morally of good enough character? Are you, you know, do you comport with the image that we have of a citizen who is responsible and capable of carrying a firearm? Well, obviously, that's a pretty broad topic. So Kavanaugh literally opened the door to replace just cause with suitability. And that, I guarantee you, will be a fight we have to fight in the future. Thank you, Justice Kavanaugh. I wish you would have just stopped. Also, they are open to reasonable regulation, which means training background checks, blah, 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 time, place, manner, and so on. Those are still on the table. So what California can do is enact enough training requirements and enough suitability requirements and enough fees that, and here's what their goal is. Make it so tiresome and so bothersome and so expensive and so time-consuming that no one will even try to get the permit.
How could suitability...
And that's how... Go ahead.
How could suitability not be discriminatory? In other words, how can Kavanaugh make a statement about suitability and that not being discrimination? Because what may be suitable to one is not suitable to another. And, you know, as far as the moral character, if a guy owns a strip club, he pays his taxes or what, you know, he hasn't been arrested, he owns a strip club, they're saying, well, you know, the suitability of you having this particular, this permission, because it's still a permission, how does suitability not fit in with permission and not be discrimination? How does that even work?
Well, you'd have to ask Kavanaugh what he was thinking when he said that, because I totally agree with you. I mean, suitability is simply another show just cause that could be expanded and used in derogatory ways. Now, the court does not close the door to challenges based on those things. So if the state of California or any other state opens the suitability box or opens the reasonable regulation box in order to prevent people from exercising the right, then some guy who's richer than me is going to have to get into this and fight for years and years and years and get that case, you know. But one thing the court did do is they are really setting up so that a lot of the house cards in California will fall. In other words, weapons in common use by lawful individuals for lawful purposes are protected by the Second Amendment. That extends to magazines and bullets and everything else. So that's good. The conduct of the individual, if it comports with the text of the Second Amendment, is presumptively protected. So that's good. There are a couple of issues, mainly sensitivity, suitability, and reasonable regulation. Those are the three openings the court left states like California. I believe those can be combated, at least in my case for sure, because what historically has been held is even states that require permission for concealed carry in historical adjudications from 18, 20, 30, 40 on were not allowed by their own courts to ban open carry. In other words, you can demand that people get permission to concealed carry, but if you do that, you can't ban open carry. So states have to allow some form of unrestricted carry. And that was the historical ruling that the court did make mention of. So there was a lot of methodology outlined in the case as to how to correctly apply history. In other words, the statue of Northumberland from 1325, that's out because it was a dictatorial, tyrannical king trying to protect his own backside. And that history is basically thrown out all the way up until the founding era, or at least the English Bill of Rights, where even England gave some people the ability to carry. So we did gain a lot of ground, and I think it's going to be enough in our case to, and like I've said before, I don't think that the courts had the backbone to eliminate permits, and I was right about that. They very specifically said they don't have any issue with the shall issue states. So, in other words, they opened the door. Permits can be required, period. Now, constitutional carry states obviously have gotten away from that. I'm glad of that. That's something. But states that require a permit can continue to require it, provided it is shall issued.
Mark?